I have an orphan child, he said. The mother was hit by a stray bullet. She just died. I sighed. Is the child hurt? No, just scared. I'll carry him back to our camp. Will one of you get his things? Take us to his camp, I said. Harry collected the child's things, and I collected the mother's and searched her body. Between us, we gathered everything. By the time we finished, the little boy, perhaps 3 years old, was crying. That scared me. I left Harry to push the dead woman's pack along in the baby carriage, and Bancoli carried the whimpering child. All I carried was the gun, drawn and ready. Even when we got back to our camp, I couldn't relax. The little boy wouldn't be quiet, and Dominique joined him with even louder cries. Zara and Jill worked to comfort the new child, but he was surrounded by strangers in the middle of the night, and he wanted his mother. I saw movement over near the burnt-out carcass of the truck. The fire was still burning, but it was smaller now, burning itself out. There were still people near it. They had lost their truck. Would they care about a crying child? And if they did care, would they want to help the kid or just shut its mouth? A lone, dark figure came away from the truck and took several steps toward us. At that moment, Natividad took the new child and, in spite of his age, gave him one breast and Dominique the other. It worked. Both children were comforted almost at once. They made a few more small sounds, then settled down to nursing. The shadow figure from the truck stood still, perhaps confused now that it was no longer guided by noise. After a moment, it turned and went back past the truck and out of sight. Gone. It couldn't have seen us. We could look out of the darkness under the trees that sheltered our campsite and see by firelight, by starlight, but others could only follow the baby noise to us. We ought to move, Allie whispered. Even if they can't see us, they know we're here. Watch with me, I said. What? Stay awake and watch with me. Let the others get a little more rest. Trying to move in the dark is more dangerous than staying put. All right. But I don't have a gun. Do you have a knife? Yeah. That will have to be enough until we get the other guns clean and ready. We've been too tired and in too much of a hurry to do that so far. Also, I don't want Allie and Jill to have guns yet. Not yet. Just keep your eyes open. The only real defense against automatic rifles is concealment and silence. A knife is better than a gun now, Zara said. If you have to use it, it will be quiet. I nodded. The rest of you try to get a little more rest. I'll wake you at dawn. Most of them lay down to sleep, or at least to rest. Natividad kept both children with her. Tomorrow, though, one of us would have to take charge of the little boy. We didn't need the burden of such a big child, one who had reached the run-around-and-grab-everything stage. But we had the little boy, and there was no one to hand him off to. No woman camping alongside a highway with her child would have other relatives handy. Olamina, Bancole said into my ear. His voice was low and soft, and only I reacted to it. I turned. He was so close, I felt his beard brush my face. Soft, thick beard. This morning, he combed it more carefully than he combed the hair on his head. He has the only mirror among us. Vain, vain old man. I moved almost by reflex toward him. I kissed him, wondering what it would feel like to kiss so much beard. I did kiss the beard at first, missing his mouth by a little in the dark. Then I found it, and he moved a little, and slipped his arms around me, and we settled to it for a little while. It was hard for me to make myself push him away. I didn't want to. He didn't want to let me. I was going to say thank you for coming after me, he said. That woman was conscious almost until she died. The only thing I could do for her was stay with her. I was afraid you might have been shot out there. I was flat on the ground until I heard the woman groaning. I sighed. Yeah. And then, rest. He lay down next to me and rubbed my arm, which tingled wherever he touched it. We should talk soon, he said. At least, I agreed. He grinned, I could see the flash of teeth, and turned over and tried to sleep. The boy's name was Justin Rohr. His dead mother had been Sandra Rohr. Justin had been born in Riverside, California, just 3 years ago. His mother had gotten him this far north from Riverside. She had saved his birth certificate, some baby pictures, and a picture of a stocky, freckled, red-haired man who was, according to a notation on the back of the photo, Richard Walter Rohr, born January 9, 2002, and died May 20th, 2026. The boy's father. Only 24 when he died. I wondered what had killed him. Sandra Rohr had saved her marriage certificate and other papers important to her. All were wrapped in a plastic packet that I had taken from her body. Elsewhere on her, I had found several $1,000 and a gold ring. There was nothing about relatives or a specific destination. It seemed that Sandra had simply been heading north with her son in search of a better life. The little boy tolerated us all well enough today, although he got frustrated when we didn't understand him at once. When he cried, he demanded that we produce his mother. Allie, of all people, was his choice for substitute mother. She resisted him at first. She ignored him or pushed him away. But when he was not being wheeled along, he chose to walk with her or demand to be carried by her. By the end of the day, she had given in. The two of them had chosen each other. She used to have a little boy, her sister Jill told me, as we walked along State 156 with a few other walkers who had chosen this route. It was empty. There were times when we could see no one at all, or when, as we headed east and north, the only people we could see were heading west and south toward us, toward the coast. She called her little boy Adam, Jill continued. He was only a few months old when he died. I looked at her. She had a big swollen purple bruise in the middle of her forehead, like a misshapen third eye. I don't think it hurt her much, though. It didn't hurt me much. When he died, I repeated, who killed him? She looked away and rubbed her bruise. Our father. That's why we left. He killed the baby. It cried. He hit it with his fists until it stopped. I shook my head and sighed. It was no news to me that other people's fathers could be monsters. I'd heard about such things all my life, but I'd never before met people who were so clearly their father's victims. We burned the house, Jill whispered. I heard her say it, and I knew without asking what she wasn't saying. But she looked like a person talking to herself, forgetting that anyone was listening. He was passed out drunk on the floor. The baby was dead. We got our stuff and our money. We earned it. And we set fire to the trash on the floor and the couch. We didn't stay to see. I don't know what happened. We ran away. Maybe the fire went out. Maybe he didn't die. She focused on me. He might still be alive. She sounded more scared than anything else. Not hopeful or sorry. Scared. The devil might still be alive. Where did you run from? I asked. What city?
Glendale.
Way down in L.A. County?
Yeah?
Then he's more than 300 miles behind you.
Yeah.
He drank a lot, didn't he? All the time. Then he'd be in no shape to follow you, even if the fire never touched him. What do you think would happen to a drunk on the highway? He'd never even make it out of L.A. She nodded.
You sound like Allie. You're both right, I know, but I dream about him sometimes. That he's coming, that he's found us. I know it's crazy, but I wake up covered in sweat.
Yeah, I said, remembering my own nightmares during the search for my father. Yeah. Jill and I walked together for a while without talking. We were moving slowly because Justin demanded to be allowed to walk now and then. He had too much energy to spend hours sitting and riding, and, of course, when he was allowed to walk, he wanted to run all around, investigate everything. I had time to stop, swing my pack around, and dig out a length of clothesline. I handed it to Jill. "Tell your sister to try harnessing him with this," I said. "It might save his life. One end around his wrist, the other around her arm." She took the rope. "I've taken care of a few 3-year-olds," I said. "And I'll tell you, she's going to need a lot of help with that little kid. If she doesn't know that now, she will."
"Are you guys just going to leave all the work to her?" Jill demanded.
"Of course not." I watched Allie and Justin walking along, lean, angular woman and pudgy bumblebee of a child. The boy ran to investigate a bush near the roadside, then, startled by the approach of strangers, ran back to Allie and hung on to the cloth of her jeans until she took his hand. "They seem to be adopting each other, though," I said. "And taking care of other people can be a good cure for nightmares like yours, and maybe hers."
"You sound as though you know."
I nodded. "I live in this world, too." We passed through Hollister before noon. We resupplied there, not knowing when we would see well-equipped stores again. We had already discovered that several of the small communities shown on the maps no longer existed, had not existed for years. The earthquake had done a lot of damage to Hollister, but the people hadn't gone animal. They seemed to be helping one another with repairs and looking after their own destitute. Imagine that. Chapter 21. The self must create its own reasons for being. To shape God, shape self. Earthseed, the Books of the Living. Monday, August 30th, 2027. There is still a little water in the San Luis Reservoir. It's more fresh water than I've ever seen in one place. But by the vast size of the reservoir, I can see that it's only a little compared to what should be there, what used to be there. The highway runs through the recreational area for several miles. That gave us a chance to travel through on the road until we spotted an area that would make a good rest day camp and that wasn't occupied. There are a lot of people in the area, people who have set up permanent camps in everything from rag and plastic tents to wooden shacks that look almost fit for human habitation. Where are so many people going to the bathroom? How clean is the water in the reservoir? No doubt cities that use it purify the water when it reaches them. Whether they do or not, I think it's time for us to break out the water purification tablets. Around several of the tents and shacks, there are small, ragged gardens, new plantings and remnants of summer vegetable gardens. There are a few things left to harvest. Big squashes, pumpkins, and gourds, still growing along with carrots, peppers, greens, and a little corn. Good, cheap, filling foods. Not enough protein, but perhaps the people hunt. There must be game around here, and I saw plenty of guns. People wear holstered handguns, or carry rifles or shotguns, The men, in particular, go armed. They all stared at us. As we went past, people stopped their gardening, outdoor cooking, or whatever to stare at us. We had pushed ourselves, had been eager to arrive ahead of the crowd I believe will soon come in from the Bay Area, so we didn't arrive with the usual human river. Yet, by ourselves, we are enough of a crowd to make the local squatters nervous. They let us alone, though. Except during disaster-induced feeding frenzies like the ones after the earthquake, most people let one another alone. I think Dominique and Justin are making it easier for us to fit in. Justin, now tethered to Allie's wrists, runs around staring at the squatters until they make him nervous. Then he runs back to Allie and demands to be carried. He's a cute little kid. Lean, grim-faced people tend to smile at him. No one shot at us or challenged us as we walked along the highway. No one bothered us later when we left the highway and headed into the trees toward what we thought might be a good area. We found old campsites and toilet places and avoided them. We didn't want to be within sight of the highway or of anyone else's tent or shack. We wanted privacy, not too many rocks to sleep on, and a way of reaching the water that didn't put us too much on display. We looked for over an hour until we found an isolated old campsite, long abandoned, and a little higher upslope than others we'd seen. It suited all of us. Then, with hours of daylight left, we rested in enormous comfort and laziness, knowing we had the rest of today and all of tomorrow to do almost nothing. Natividad fed Dominique, and the two of them drifted off to sleep. Allie followed her example with Justin, although preparing him a meal was a little more complicated. Both women had more reason to be tired and to need sleep than the rest of us, so we left them out when we drew lots for a watch schedule, one for day and night. We shouldn't get too comfortable. Also, we agreed that no one should go off exploring or getting water alone. I thought the couples would soon start going off together. And I thought it was just about time for Bankole and me to have that talk. I sat with him and cleaned our new handgun while he cleaned the rifle. Harry was on watch and needed my gun. When I went over to give it to him, he let me know he understood exactly what was going on between Bankole and me. "Be careful," he whispered. "Don't give the poor old guy a heart attack." "I'll tell him you were worried," I said. Harry laughed, then sobered. "Be careful, Lauren. Bankole is probably all right, he seems to be, but, well, yell if anything goes wrong." I rested my hand on his shoulder for a moment and said, "Thank you." The nice thing about sitting and working alongside someone you don't know very well, someone you'd like to know much better, is that you can talk with him or be quiet with him. You can get comfortable with him and with the awareness that you'll soon be making love to him. Bankole and I were quiet for a while, a little shy. I sneaked glances at him and caught him sneaking glances at me. Then, to my own surprise, I began to talk to him about Earthseed. Not preaching, just talking. Testing, I guess. I needed to see his reaction. Earthseed is the most important thing in my life. If Bankole were going to laugh at it, I needed to know now. I didn't expect him to agree with it or even to be much interested in it. He's an old man. I thought he was probably content with whatever religion he had. It occurred to me, as I spoke, that I had no idea what his religion was. I asked him. "None at all," he said. "When my wife was alive, we went to a Methodist church. Her religion was important to her, so I went along. I saw how it comforted her, and I wanted to believe, but I never could." "We were Baptists," I said. I couldn't make myself believe either. and I couldn't tell anyone. My father was the minister. I kept quiet and began to understand Earthseed. Began to invent Earthseed, he said. Began to discover it and understand it, I said. Stumbling across the truth isn't the same as making things up. I wondered how many times and ways I would have to say this to new people. It sounds like some combination of Buddhism, existentialism, Sufism, and I don't know what else, he said. Buddhism doesn't make a god of the concept of change, but the impermanence of everything is a basic Buddhist principle. I know, I said. I've done a lot of reading. Some other religions and philosophies do contain ideas that would fit into Earthseed, but none of them are Earthseed. They go off in their own directions. He nodded. All right. But tell me, what do people have to do to be good members of an Earthseed community? A nice door-opening question. The essentials, I answered, are to shape God with forethought, care, and work, to educate and benefit their community, their families, and themselves, and to contribute to the fulfillment of the destiny. And why should people bother about the destiny, far-fetched as it is? What's in it for them? A unifying, purposeful life here on earth, and the hope of heaven for themselves and their children, a real heaven, not mythology or philosophy, a heaven that will be theirs to shape. Or hell, he said. His mouth twitched. Human beings are good at creating hells for themselves, even out of richness. He thought for a moment. It sounds too simple, you know. You think it's simple? I asked in surprise. I said it sounds too simple. It sounds overwhelming to some people. I mean, it's too straightforward. If you get people to accept it, they'll make it more complicated, more open to interpretation, more mystical, and more comforting. Not around me, they won't, I said. With you or without you, they will. All religions change. Think about the big ones. What do you think Christ would be these days? A Baptist? A Methodist? A Catholic? And the Buddha? Do you think he'd be a Buddhist now? What kind of Buddhism would he practice? He smiled. After all, if God is change, surely Earthseed can change. And if it lasts, it will. I looked away from him because he was smiling. This was all nothing to him. I know, I said. No one can stop change, but we all shape change, whether we mean to or not. I mean to guide and shape Earthseed into what it should be. Perhaps, he went on smiling. How serious are you about this? The question drove me deep into myself. I spoke, almost not knowing what I would say. When my father disappeared, I began. It was Earthseed that kept me going. When most of my community and the rest of my family were wiped out and I was alone, I still had Earthseed. What I am now, all that I am now, is Earthseed. What you are now, he said after a long silence, is a very unusual young woman. We didn't talk for a while after that. I wondered what he thought. He hadn't seemed to be bottling up too much hilarity, no more than I'd expected. He had been willing to go along with his wife's religious needs. Now he would at least permit me mine. I wondered about his wife. He hadn't mentioned her before. What had she been like? How had she died? Did you leave home because your wife died? I asked. He put down a long, slender cleaning rod and rested his back against the tree behind him. My wife died 5 years ago, he said. Three men broke in. Junkies. Dealers, I don't know. They beat her. Tried to make her tell where the drugs were.
Drugs?
They had decided that we must have something they could use or sell. They didn't like the things she was able to give them, so they kept beating her. She had a heart problem. He drew a long breath, then sighed. She was still alive when I got home. She was able to tell me what had happened. I tried to help her, but the bastards had taken her medicine, taken everything. I phoned for an ambulance. It arrived an hour after she died. I tried to save her, to revive her. I tried so damn hard. I stared down the hill from our camp, where just a glint of water was visible in the distance through the trees and bushes. The world is full of painful stories. Sometimes it seems as though there aren't any other kind. And yet I found myself thinking how beautiful that glint of water was through the trees. I should have headed north when Sharon died, Bencole said. I thought about it. But you stayed. I turned away from the water and looked at him. Why? He shook his head. I didn't know what to do. So for some time, I didn't do anything. Friends took care of me, cooked for me, cleaned the house. It surprised me that they would do that. Church people, most of them. Neighbors. More her friends than mine. I thought about Wardell Parrish, devastated after the loss of his sister and her children and his house. Had Bencole been some community's Wardell Parrish? Did you live in a walled community? I asked. Yes. Not rich, though. Nowhere near rich. People managed to hold on to their property and feed their families, not much else. No servants, no hired guards. Sounds like my old neighborhood. I suppose it sounds like a lot of old neighborhoods that aren't there anymore. I stayed to help the people who had helped me. I couldn't walk away from them.
But you did. You left. Why?
Fire and scavengers.
You too. Your whole community?
Yes. The houses burned. Most of the people were killed. The rest scattered. Went to family or friends elsewhere. Scavengers and squatters moved in. I didn't decide to leave. I escaped.
Much too familiar. Where did you live? What city?
San Diego.
That far south?
Yes, as I said, I should have left years ago. If I had, I could have managed plane fare and resettlement money.
Plane fare and resettlement money. He might not call that rich, but we would have. Where are you going now? I asked.
North, he shrugged.
Just anywhere north, or somewhere in particular?
Anywhere where I can be paid for my services, and allowed to live among people who aren't out to kill me for my food or water.
Or for drugs, I thought.
I looked into his bearded face and added up the hints I'd picked up today and over the past few days.
You're a doctor, aren't you?
He looked a little surprised.
I was, yes.
Family practice. It seems a long time ago.
People will always need doctors, I said. You'll do all right.
My mother used to say that. He gave me a wry smile. But here I am.
I smiled back because, looking at him now, I couldn't help myself. But as he spoke, I decided he had told me at least one lie. He might be as displaced and in distress as he appeared to be, but he wasn't just wandering north. He wasn't looking for just anywhere he could be paid for his services
and not robbed or murdered. He wasn't the kind of man who wandered. He knew where he was going. He had a haven somewhere, a relative's home, another home of his own, a friend's home, something, some definite destination. Or perhaps he just had enough money to buy a place for himself in Washington or Canada or Alaska. He had had to choose between fast, safe, expensive air travel and having settling in money when he got where he was going. He had chosen settling in money. If so, I agreed with him. He was taking the kind of risk that would enable him to make a new beginning as soon as possible, if he survived. On the other hand, if I were right about any of this, he might disappear on me some night. Or perhaps he would be more open about it. Just walk away from me someday, turn down a side road and wave goodbye. I didn't want that. After I'd slept with him, I would want it even less. Even now, I wanted to keep him with me. I hated that he was lying to me already, or I believed he was. But why should he tell me everything? He didn't know me very well yet, and like me, he meant to survive. Perhaps I could convince him that he and I could survive well together. Meanwhile, best to enjoy him without quite trusting him. I might be wrong about all this, but I don't believe I am. Pity. We finished the guns, loaded them, and went down to the water to wash. You could go right down to the water, scoop some up in a pot, and take it away. It was free. I kept looking around, thinking someone would come to stop us or charge us or something. I suppose we could have been robbed, but no one paid any attention to us. We saw other people getting water in bottles, canteens, pots, and bags, but the place seemed peaceful. No one bothered anyone. No one paid any attention to us. A place like this can't last, I told Bankole. It's a shame. Life could be good here. I suspect that it's against the law to live here, he said. This is a state recreation area. There should be some kind of limit on how long you could stay. I'm certain that there should be, used to be, some group policing the place. I wonder if officials of some kind come around to collect bribes now and then. Not while we're here, I hope. I dried my hands and arms and waited for him to dry his. Are you hungry? I asked. Oh, yes, he said. He looked at me for a while, then reached for me. He took me by both arms, drew me to him, kissed me, and spoke into my ear. Aren't you? I didn't say anything. After a while, I took his hand, and we went back to camp to pick up one of his blankets. Then we went to an isolated little spot that we had both noticed earlier. It felt natural and easy to lie down with him and explore the smooth, hard, broad feel of his body. He'd kept himself fit. No doubt walking hundreds of miles in the past few weeks had burned off whatever fat he'd been carrying. He was still big, barrel-chested and tall. Best of all, he took a lot of uncomplicated pleasure in my body, and I got to share it with him. It isn't often that I can enjoy the good side of my hyper-empathy. I let the sensation take over, intense and wild. I might be more in danger of having a heart attack than he is. How had I done without this for so long? There was an odd, unromantic moment when we both reached into crumpled clothing and produced condoms. It was funny because of the way it hit both of us at once. And we laughed, then went on to the serious business of loving and pleasuring one another. That combed and trimmed beard that he's so vain about tickles like mad. I knew I should have let you alone, he said to me when we had made love twice and were still not willing to get up and go back to the others. You're going to kill me. I'm too old for this stuff. I laughed and made a pillow of his shoulder. After a while, he said, I need to be serious for a minute, girl.
Okay.
He drew a long breath, sighed, swallowed, hesitated. I don't want to give you up, he said. I smiled. You're a kid, he said. I ought to know better. How old are you, anyway? I told him. He jumped, then pushed me off his shoulder. 18? He flinched away from me as though my skin burned him. My God, he said, you're a baby. I'm a child molester. I didn't laugh, though I wanted to. I just looked at him. After a while, he frowned and shook his head. In a little more time, he moved back against me, touching my face, my shoulders, my breasts. You're not just 18, he said. I shrugged. When were you born? What year?
2009.
No. He drew the word out. No. I kissed him and said in the same tone, yes. Now stop your nonsense. You want to be with me, and I want to be with you. We're not going to split up because of my age, are we? After a while, he shook his head. You should have a nice youngster, like Travis, he said. I should have the sense and the strength to send you off to find one. That made me think of Curtis, and I cringed away from thinking of him. I've thought as little as possible about Curtis Talcott. He isn't like my brothers. He may be dead, but none of us ever saw his body. I saw his brother Michael. I was terrified of seeing Curtis himself, but I never did. He may not be dead. He's lost to me, but I hope he's not dead. He should be here with me on the road. I hope he's alive and all right. Who have I reminded you of? Bancoli asked me, his voice soft and deep. I shook my head.
A boy I knew at home.
We were going to get married this year. I don't even know whether he's still alive. You loved him?
Yes.
We were going to marry and leave home, walk north. We had decided to go this fall. That's crazy. You intended to walk this road even though you didn't have to?
Yes.
And if we had left earlier, he'd be with me. I wish I knew he was all right. He lay down on his back and drew me down beside him. We've all lost someone, he said. You and I seem to have lost everyone. That's a bond, I suppose.
A terrible one, I said. But not our only one.
He shook his head. You're really 18? Yes, as of last month. You look and act years older.
This is who I am, I said.
You were the oldest kid in your family, weren't you? I nodded. I had four brothers. They're all dead. Yes, he sighed. Yes. Tuesday, August 31st, 2027. I've spent all of today talking, writing, reading, and making love to Bancoli. It seems such a luxury not to have to get up, pack, and walk all day. We all lay sprawled around the campsite, resting aching muscles, eating and doing nothing. More people flowed into the area from the highway and made their camps, but none of them bothered us. I began Zara's reading lesson, and Jill and Allie looked interested. I included them as though I had intended to from the first. It turned out that they could read a little, but hadn't learned to write. Toward the end of the lesson, I read a few Earthseed verses to them in spite of Harry's groans. Yet when Allie proclaimed that she would never pray to any god of change, Harry was the one who corrected her. Zara and Travis both smiled at that, and Bankole watched us all with apparent interest. After that, Allie began to ask questions instead of making scornful proclamations, and for the most part, the others answered her. Travis and Natividad, Harry and Zara. Once, Bankole answered, expanding on something I told him yesterday. Then he caught himself and looked a little embarrassed. "I still think it's too simple," he said to me. "A lot of it is logical, but it will never work without a sprinkling of mystical confusion." "I'll leave that to my descendants," I said. And he busied himself, digging a bag of almonds out of his pack, pouring some into his hand and passing the rest around. Just before nightfall, a gun battle began over toward the highway. We couldn't see any of it from where we were, but we stopped talking and lay down. With bullets flying, it seemed best to keep low. The shooting started and stopped, moved away, then came back. I was on watch, so I had to stay alert. But in this storm of noise, nothing moved near us except the trees in the evening breeze. It looked so peaceful, and yet people out there were trying to kill each other, and no doubt succeeding. Strange how normal it's become for us to lie on the ground and listen while nearby people try to kill each other. Chapter 22. As wind, as water, as fire, as life, God is both creative and destructive, demanding and yielding, sculptor and clay. God is infinite potential. God is change. Earthseed, the Books of the Living. Thursday, September 9th, 2027. We've had over a week of weary, frightening, nerve-wracking walking. We've reached and passed through the city of Sacramento without real trouble. We've been able to buy enough food and water, been able to find plenty of empty places in the hills where we could make camp. Yet none of us have had any feelings of comfort or well-being along the stretch of Interstate 5 that we've just traveled. I-5 is much less traveled than US 101, in spite of the earthquake chaos. There were times when the only people we could see were each other. Those times never lasted long, but they did happen. On the other hand, there were more trucks on I-5. We had to be careful because trucks traveled during the day as well as at night. Also, there were more human bones on I-5. It was nothing to run across skulls, lower jaws, or bones of the pelvis and torso. Arm and leg bones were rare, but now and then we spotted them too. "I think it's the trucks," Bankole told us. "If they hit someone along here, they wouldn't stop. They wouldn't dare. And the junkies and alcoholics wouldn't be that careful where they walked." I suppose he's right. Although along the whole empty stretch of road, we saw only 4 people whom I believed were either not sober or not sane. But we saw other things. On Tuesday, we camped in a little hollow back in the hills to the west of the road, and a big black and white dog came wandering down toward our camp with the fresh-looking, bloodied hand and forearm of a child in its mouth. The dog spotted us, froze, turned, and ran back the way it had come. But we all got a good look before it went, and we all saw the same thing. That night, we posted a double watch. 2 watchers, 2 guns, no unnecessary conversation, no sex. The next day, we decided not to take another rest day until we had passed through Sacramento. There was no guarantee that anything would be better on the other side of Sacramento, but we wanted to get away from this grim land. That night, Looking for a place to camp, we stumbled across four ragged, filthy kids huddled around a campfire. The picture of them is still clear in my mind. Kids the age of my brothers, 12, 13, maybe 14 years old. Three boys and a girl. The girl was pregnant, and so huge it was obvious she would be giving birth any day. We rounded a bend in a dry stream bed, and there these kids were, roasting a severed human leg, maneuvering it where it lay in the middle of their fire atop the burning wood by twisting its foot. As we watched, the girl pulled a sliver of charred flesh from the thigh and stuffed it into her mouth. They never saw us. I was in the lead, and I stopped the others before they all rounded the bend. Harry and Zara, who were just behind me, saw all that I saw. We turned the others back and away, not telling them why, until we were far from those kids and their cannibal feast. No one attacked us. No one bothered us at all. The country we walked through was even beautiful in some places. Green trees and rolling hills, golden dried grasses and tiny communities, farms, many overgrown and abandoned houses. Nice country, and compared to Southern California, rich country. More water, more food, more room. So why were the people eating one another? There were several burned-out buildings. It was obvious that there had been trouble here too, but much less than on the coast. Yet, we couldn't wait to get back to the coast. Sacramento was all right to resupply in and hurry through. Water and food were cheap there compared to what we could buy along the roadside, of course. Cities were always a relief as far as prices went. But cities were also dangerous. More gangs, more cops, more suspicious, nervous people with guns. You tiptoe through cities. You keep up a steady pace, keep your eyes open, and try to look both too intimidating to bother and invisible. Neat trick. Bancole says cities have been like that for a long time. Speaking of Bancole, I haven't let him get much rest on this rest day. He doesn't seem to mind. He did say something that I should make note of, though. He said he wanted me to leave the group with him. He has, as I suspected, a safe haven, or as safe as any haven can be that isn't surrounded by high-tech security devices and armed guards. It's in the hills, on the coast, near Cape Mendocino, maybe 2 weeks from here. My sister and her family have been living there, he said, but the property belongs to me. There's room on it for you. I could imagine how delighted his sister would be to see me. Would she try to be polite? Or would she stare at me, then at him, then demand to know whether he was in his right mind? Did you hear what I said? He demanded. I looked at him, interested in the anger I heard in his voice. Why anger? What am I doing, boring you? He demanded. I took his hand and kissed it. You introduce me to your sister, and she'll measure you for a straitjacket. After a while, he laughed. Yes. And then, I don't care. You might, sooner or later. You'll come with me then. No. I'd like to, but no. He smiled. Yes. You'll come. I watched him. I tried to read the smile, but it's hard to read a bearded face. It's easier to say what I didn't see or didn't recognize. I didn't see condescension or that particular kind of disregard that some men reserve for women. He wasn't deciding that my no was a secret yes. Something else was going on. I own 300 acres, he said. I bought the property years ago as an investment. There was going to be a big housing development up there. And speculators like me were going to make tons of money, selling our land to the developers. The project fell through for some reason, and I was stuck with land that I could either sell at a loss or keep. I kept it. Most of it is good for farming. It's got some trees on it and some big tree stumps. My sister and her husband have built a house and a few outbuildings. You might have dozens or hundreds of squatters on that land now, I said. I don't think so. Access is a problem. It's not convenient to any real road, and it's well away from the big highways. It's a great place to hide. Water? There are wells. My sister says the area is getting drier, warmer, that's no surprise, but the groundwater seems dependable so far. I thought I could see where he was headed now. But he was going to have to get there all by himself. His land. His choice. There aren't many black people up that way, are there? I asked. Not many, he agreed. My sister hasn't had much trouble, though. What does she do for a living? Farm the land? Yes. And her husband does odd jobs for cash. Which is dangerous because it leaves her and the children alone for days, weeks, even months at a time. If we can manage to support ourselves without becoming a drain on her few resources, we might be useful to her. We might give her more security. How many kids? 3. Let's see. 11, 13, and 15 years old by now. She's only 40 herself. His mouth twitched. Only, yeah. Even his little sister was old enough to be my mother. Her name's Alex. Alexandra. Married to Don Casey. They both hate cities. They thought my land was a godsend. They could raise their children who might live to grow up. He nodded. And their children have done all right. How have you kept in touch? I asked. Phone? That's part of our agreement, he said. They don't have a phone. But when Don goes to one of the towns to get work, he phones me and lets me know how everyone is. He won't know what's happened to me. He won't be expecting me. If he's tried to phone, both he and Alex will be worried. You should have flown up, I said. But I'm glad you didn't. Are you? So am I. Listen, you are coming with me. I can't think of anything I want as much as I want you. I haven't wanted anything at all for a long time, too long. I leaned back against a tree. Our campsite wasn't as completely private as the one at San Luis had been. But there were trees, and the couples could get away from each other. Each couple had one gun, and the Gilchrist sisters were babysitting Dominique as well as Justin. We had put them in the middle of a rough triangle and given them my gun. On I-5, they and Travis had had a chance to do a little target practice. It was all of our duty to look around now and then and make sure no strangers wandered into the area. I looked around. Sitting up, I could see Justin running around, chasing pigeons. Jill was keeping an eye on him, but not trying to keep up with him. Bencole took me by the shoulders, turned me to face him. I'm not boring you, am I? He asked for the second time. I had been trying not to look at him. I looked now. But he had not yet said what he had to say if he wanted to keep me with him. Did he know? I thought he did. I want to go with you, I said. But I'm serious about Earthseed. I couldn't be more serious. You have to understand that. Why did this sound strange to me? It was the absolute truth, but
I felt odd telling it.
I know my rival, he said. Maybe that's why it sounded strange. I was telling him there was someone else, something else. Maybe it would have sounded less strange if the something were another man.
You could help me, I said.
Help you what? Do you have any real idea what you want to do?
Begin the first Earthsea community.
He sighed.
You could help me, I repeated. This world is falling apart. You could help me begin something purposeful and constructive.
Going to fix the world, are you? He said with quiet amusement. I looked at him. For a moment, I was too angry to let myself speak. When I could control my voice, I said,
It's all right if you don't believe, but don't laugh.
Do you know what it means to have something to believe in? Don't laugh. After a while, he said, All right. After a longer while, I said, Fixing the world is not what Earthseed is about. The stars, I know. He lay flat on his back, but turned his head to look at me instead of looking up.
This world would be a better place if people lived according to Earthseed, I said.
But then, this world would be better if people lived according to the teachings of almost any religion. That's true. Why do you think they'll live according to the teaching of yours?
Few will.
Several thousand? Several hundred thousand? Millions? I don't know. But when I have a home base, I'll begin the first community. In fact, I've already begun it. Is that what you need me for? He didn't bother to smile or pretend it was a joke. It wasn't. I moved over closer to him and sat next to him so that I could look down into his face.
I need you to understand me, I said. I need you to take me the way I am, or go off to your land by yourself.
You need me to take you and all your friends off the street so you can start a church. Again, he was altogether serious.
That or nothing,
I said with equal seriousness. He gave me a humorless smile.
So, now we know where we stand.
I smoothed his beard and saw that he wanted to move away from my hand, but he didn't move.
Are you all that sure you want God as your rival? I asked.
I don't seem to have much choice, do I? He covered my caressing hand with one of his. Tell me, do you ever lose your temper and scream and cry?
Sure.
I can't picture it. In all honesty, I can't. And that reminded me of something that I hadn't told him. Had better tell him before he found out and felt cheated or decided that I didn't trust him, which I still didn't quite. But I didn't want to lose him to stupidity or cowardice. I didn't want to lose him at all.
Still want me with you? I asked.
Oh, yes, he said. I intend to marry you once we've settled. He had managed to surprise me. I stared at him with my mouth open. A genuine spur-of-the-moment reaction, he said. I'll have to remember it. Will you marry me, by the way?
Listen to me first.
No more. Bring your church. Bring your congregation. I doubt they care any more about the stars than I do, but bring them. I like them. And there's room for them. If they would come. My next effort would be to convince them, but this effort wasn't over yet.
That isn't all, I said. Let me tell you one more thing. Then, if you still want me, I'll marry you any time you say. I want to. You must know I want to.
He waited.
My mother was taking, abusing